From Minnesota Public Radio, this is Grammar Grader. It's the podcast about words, grammar, and usage for the information age. This week's episode, an interesting compromise. So it goes.
I really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, and the restaurant was really good, too.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun tonight.
Me too. Would you like to come upstairs and listen to my CD collection?
Sure, yeah.
This is one of my favorites.
Oh, you really meant you wanted to listen to CDs.
Yeah. I just love this piece.
Of course. It's Stravinsky. I like classical music, too.
That's so great. I meet a lot of people who think classical music is dead.
No way, baby. Classical music is alive and well.
The same could be said of language. Just like music, language is a living organism that's always growing, evolving, and changing. To that end, I recently read a newspaper article that contained this sentence.
The research group is comprised of doctors.
It's a fine sentence, but there was a time not long ago when the writer may have been criticized for using comprised in this way. It used to be that comprise meant only to include, contain, or consist of. Meanwhile, the word compose means to make up. So to use the example above, the writer at one time may have been asked to rewrite his sentence as
doctors comprise the research group.
Or
the research group is composed of doctors.
Evidently, that's not the case nowadays. Research showed that comprise can also mean to make up. Like a Richard Leakey of language, I tried to trace the origins of this evolution. In a Gregg reference manual printed in 1994, I found the editors unbending about the transposition of comprise and compose. They made it clear the words couldn't be switched. Fast forward to an Oxford Dictionary of Current English published in 1998, and to make up is listed as a third definition for comprise, but it is followed by a usage note that gently warns writers,
"This use of comprise is considered incorrect, and compose is generally preferred."
Finally, the 2001 imprint of the same dictionary listed to make up as a definition of comprise, and the old caveat was nowhere to be found. If a word gets used by many people in a certain way, even if it veers from the original meaning, it eventually becomes accepted. It's sort of the old tug of war between prescriptivism and descriptivism. To understand that better, we'll talk to David McCoskey, a PhD student in computational linguistics at the University of Minnesota. Welcome, David.
Hi, Luke. Glad to be here.
So how would you define prescriptivism versus descriptivism?
Well, the distinction I make is top-down versus bottom-up processing. Prescriptivism is where rules about how one is to speak or write are decided beforehand and everyone has to follow them. APA citation style is a good example. I before E except after C, sort of as a rule, is another example. Thus, prescriptivism is top-down. Descriptivism is where we are trying to describe in general terms some speech act that people do naturally and without giving it much thought. There are some very interesting examples of this in Steven Pinker's book, The Language Instinct, but descriptivism is essentially bottom-up.
So would you say dictionaries are more descriptive?
Essentially, yes. There is some debate as to how well dictionaries describe language and how people use it, but generally that's the intent.
And because dictionaries are descriptive like that, is it logical to use a dictionary to defend your word choice in writing or speaking?
Generally speaking, yes. And the reason is that when one uses a word, one appeals to a common understanding of that word. And so to correct somebody in the use of that word is something that you need to be careful about because words do change in meaning over time. But you're also kind of speaking on behalf of the meaning that already exists for the community that's using it.
Well, thanks, David. I guess it appears that the reins have loosened on a couple of useful words, compose and comprise.
Yes, I think so.
Hey, does that mean there will come a day when we start referring to Stravinsky as a compriser?
No, I don't think so.
This has been Grammar Grader from Minnesota Public Radio. Source material for this episode comes from the Gregg Reference Manual by William A. Sabin and from the Oxford Dictionary of Current English, both of which can be found at publicradiomarket.org. If you'd like to see a written version of this episode, go to minnesotapublicradio.org and click on Grammar Grader in the Programs menu. Thanks as always to the Grammatis Personae players, Amy Ault and John Ryan. Special thanks to linguist David McCoskey for joining us this week. Our editor is Jen Houck. Our producer is Brett Baldwin. Executive producer is John Pearson. I'm Luke Taylor. Thanks for listening. And if you like Grammar Grader, join the discussion, give feedback, and share your thoughts at grammargrader.gather.com.